This is a Rabble Podcast Network show.
New voices in your head.
It's Radio Free Radio.
You're listening to Red Eye on Vancouver Cooperative Radio, CFRO 100.5 FM.
In September last year, transit ads showing four maps of Palestine started appearing on the side of Vancouver buses. The ad campaign was organized by the Palestine Awareness Coalition. The maps were titled Disappearing Palestine. The only text on the graphic, apart from a date for each map, were the words, 5 million Palestinians are classified as refugees by the UN. The campaign met with loud opposition from Zionist groups, who created their own series of three maps titled Jewish Loss of Land, 1000 BCE to 2013. These two series of maps form the backdrop to a recent talk organized by the Palestinian Awareness Coalition. Dr. Hani Faris was invited to explore the historical context of the Palestine maps. Dr. Faris is adjunct professor in the Department of Political Science and a research associate in the Institute for Asian Research at UBC. He spoke at SFU Harbor Center on January 24th. We recorded the event and will bring you some excerpts this hour. We join Dr. Faris as he talks about the genesis of the idea of an ad campaign to educate people about Palestine. If you would like to take a look at the maps as you listen, you can see them on the website of the Palestine Awareness Coalition.
It all started in Denver, Colorado, in 2012. At Denver, two organizations sought and failed to place billboards calling for an end to U.S. military aid to Israel. Their ad said, "Tell Congress, stop killing children. No more military aid to Israel." Of course, the agency refused to put up these ads on its billboards. They rejected the ads, and they told the two organizations, "You are not allowed to bring up the words Israel or Jew." That was fine, so the two organizations resubmitted an ad that said, "Want peace? Stop ethnic cleansing in Palestine." The ad was again refused, and this time no excuse was offered. The organizations decided then to adopt the tactics used by a New York-based organization called Freedom Defense Institute, which succeeded in placing its overtly bigoted and hateful anti-Muslim ads in public transit advertising space in both New York as well as San Francisco. These ads had originally been refused, and what Freedom Defense Institute did was to obtain a court order which argued that public, in contrast to private ad spaces, are subject to the rules of free speech. Encouraged by their findings, the two organizations demanded their ads be placed on public buses and called on the advertising agency to respect their freedom of speech. After much deliberation, the ad was placed inside and outside public buses in Denver, Colorado. Pro-Israel organizations seem to have decided not to challenge the ad in the courts for fear that the courts, in examining the statement that Israel is ethnically cleansing the Palestinian population from their country, could actually decide that the statement is true. And that would be disastrous. It would set a precedent all over North America. So they decided not to challenge it in court and to let it happen. They decided not to poke a beehive and to trigger a discussion on disappearing Palestine. A group called Palestine Awareness Coalition asked TransLink to post an ad titled Disappearing Palestine that shows four maps that you can see on the wall and the statement that there are 5 million Palestinian refugees. The maps went up on Tuesday, August 27th. They were displayed on the outside of 15 buses and at a wall mural in a downtown SkyTrain station for 30 days. The wall mural was extended for another 30 days, and the second was posted at the Oak Ridge station. The murals were torn, as you mentioned, and replaced three times. In all likelihood, the identity of the perpetrators is known to TransLink and to the RCMP. Why? Because these areas are covered 24 hours by cameras. In spite of the extreme pressure applied on TransLink, their public transit authority announced the maps. This public transit authority announced the maps will stay up because they comply with Canadian advertising standards and do not violate any human rights. A very interesting statement that was posted on the website of TransLink. TransLink staff had asked for legal opinion, advice, and were told they could not reject the ads because of an earlier decision by the Supreme Court of Canada regarding posting of ads and the freedom of expression. The TransLink board was not satisfied, and it commissioned a second legal opinion. They were told the same. The BC Civil Liberties Association concurred with the legal opinions. Its executive director announced, to quote, "As a government agency, TransLink has got to respect freedom of expression. They cannot deny that to people just because the content of the message may be political. It's pretty cut and dry from our perspective." Immediately after the ad was posted, a controversy raged in the city, in Canada, nationally, and internationally, all because of four maps. What explains this phenomenon? What did the maps say that made them touch a raw nerve? Essentially, there were two groups to the controversy. The first was represented by the pro-Palestinian Palestine Awareness Coalition, and the second was represented by the pro-Israel spokespersons and organizations of the Canadian Jewish establishment, and an Israeli organization called Stand With Us. It would be worthwhile to survey the arguments and examine the logic or rationale used by both to explain their position. Let us start with the initiators of the ads, the Palestine Awareness Coalition. The coalition is made up of seven organizations: Boycott Israeli Apartheid Campaign, Building Bridges, Canada-Palestine Association, Canada-Palestine Network, Independent Jewish Voices, Seriously Free Speech, and Solidarity for Palestinian Human Rights. An eighth group joined later, which is Canadian Sabil. A quick look at the names of the organizations indicates two features. One, there are Palestinian, Jewish, and non-denominational groups in the coalition. Two, some are totally dedicated to the issue of Palestine. Others have a much wider interest. Clearly, what forms the common denominator among them is the defense of issues of freedom and human rights in general, and that of the Palestinians in particular. A spokesperson for the seven groups, Charlotte Gates, gave three reasons for the ads: highlight ongoing human rights violations against the Palestinians, demonstrate the successive occupation by Israel of Palestinian territory, and three, raise awareness among the people of Vancouver of what is happening to the Palestinians. Another member of the coalition, Ada Glustein, explained the goal of raising awareness in the following words, to quote, "Awareness is the seed that is needed for the plant to sprout and for any positive action to flourish. The coalition wanted to tell the Palestinian story without blame or venom." Ada explained that it was her Jewish background and upbringing that taught her to question, to become a critical thinker, and to see beyond the pale. She concluded her piece by addressing members of the Jewish community in Vancouver who are afraid to be aware of the Palestinian condition with the following call, to quote, "Open your eyes, look at the map and see the reality. Palestine is disappearing. Homes are disappearing. Orchards are disappearing. And the Palestinian people as fellow humans need to be seen, heard, and counted just as any other group on this earth. Seeds of fear and bitterness grow into hatred, separation, and isolation. Better to plant seeds of compassion, seeds of understanding that can grow into just, safe, and caring communities." Finally, Tyler Levitan of Independent Jewish Voices Canada said, "As a Jew, I feel unsafe by what Israel is doing to the Palestinians, not by the non-violent resistance of Palestinians to Israel's crimes." These, then, were the arguments advanced by the spokespersons of the Palestine Awareness Coalition. It is definitely worth pointing out that those who defended, explained, and justified the ad campaign were predominantly Jewish. What about the positions of the Jewish pro-Israel groups, and how did they explain and defend their positions. In the Banai Brith, National Director of Legal Affairs to the Banai Brith, National Director of Legal Affairs, Anita Bromberg, the Vancouver Ad Campaign is only a part of a larger campaign to wipe Israel off the map. It is very derogatory of Israel and its supporters, who can be a target of hate, violence, and other acts of mischief. So according to the spokesperson of Banai Brith Canada, these maps are part of a much larger conspiracy to erase Israel off the map. To the Banai Brith Canada, the groups that sponsored the ad campaign are anti-Israel groups and, to quote, fundamentally anti-Semitic. In other words, Anita and her organization saw in the ad campaign a large conspiracy to wipe out Israel and the supporters of Israel. Pro-Israel organizations in Vancouver were not satisfied with just condemning the Disappearing Palestine ad campaign. They went to lengths to force TransLink to pull out the ads and threatened it, as well as the coalition, with legal action. A review of the bulletin issued on August 28 and labeled Important Community Update by the Center for Israel and Jewish Affairs, Pacific Region, and the Jewish Federation of Greater Vancouver is worth examining. It spoke of, to quote, a sustained campaign, both public and unannounced, waged to have the ad removed. The campaign went on for six weeks, prior to the posting of the ads. For 6 weeks, there was an immense, intense campaign to remove the ads. Nobody knows this. Hardly anyone knows this. And continued after they were posted. The campaign targeted TransLink management as well as board of directors. It sought to enlist mayors of Greater Vancouver, BC members of the Legislative Assembly, labor and professional unions, and federal cabinet ministers. The campaign failed to achieve its target. It was unfortunate that instead of respecting and recognizing that TransLink was under the legal obligation to respect the right of the Palestinian Awareness Coalition to freedom of expression, they attributed the failure, guess what, of their campaign to the fact that the ads targeted Jews, according to them. The co-chairs of the Center for Israel, the co-chair of the Center for Israel and Jewish Affairs, lamented that if the campaign had targeted non-Jewish groups, the situation would have been taken more seriously. In the aftermath of the pressure campaign, an organization called Stand With Us that describes itself as an international Israeli education organization with the slogan supporting Israel around the world came forward. It submitted to Advertising Standards Canada, a national regulatory body for the Canadian advertising industry, complaints regarding the ad which were registered with Advertising Standards Canada In one passage, the complaint reads, to quote, "The ads are totally incorrect and cannot be substantiated by any level of research or historical correctness. The information is inflammatory and biased and basically a lie and does not meet the standards of truth in advertising. The ads must be terminated immediately." The Palestine Awareness Coalition responded to the complaints, and Advertising Standards Canada accepted their replies and decided not to pursue the matter any further. Having failed to sway Advertising Standards Canada, Stand With Us moved to develop its own ads, which included three maps and were placed in Vancouver transit stations in October of 2003. To sum, in all their comments, the pro-Israel groups have, without exception, taken a very rigid position. They see no value or merit in the Palestinian Awareness Coalition ad, and they deny that the maps have any basis in fact or reality. After the second set of ads came out, I sent both sets to a colleague of mine, a close friend of mine, who is a senior partner in one of the major law firms in Vancouver. I said, "Look what's happening." He wrote back and gave me the following comment. "I find the disappearing Palestine ad to be very effective. The response is interesting. It likely reflects how they truly feel, and the factual inaccuracies are irrelevant to them. We must keep in mind, though, that the vast majority of the public is ignorant about Palestine. Therefore, the inaccuracies mostly do not matter much. And their ads speak mostly to those who blindly follow their mantra in any event."
You're listening to Red Eye on Vancouver Cooperative Radio, CFRO 100.5 FM. And this hour, we've been listening to Dr. Hani Faris talking about the historical context of the maps of disappearing Palestine that started appearing on the side of Vancouver buses last September. And in this second excerpt from Dr. Faris's talk, he explores each of the four maps one by one, outlining the concepts behind the division of ownership of land in the images. And you can see the maps on the website of the Palestine Awareness Coalition.
The first map of Palestine, which says 1946, reflects three items: the population of the land, land ownership, and the culture and demography and the culture of the Palestinian land. So three elements are being projected here: the number of the Palestinian population, of the people of the land, and those of the Palestinian Jews, the land ownership in Palestine, and third, the dominant culture in the country. And this is a map dated 1946. So it's before the rise of Israel and the partition of Palestine. The boundaries of the country, as you know, Mandate Palestine, was endorsed by the League of Nations and passed as a geopolitical entity in June of 1922. It was placed under a British administration with the express understanding that the mandate will be of a transitional nature and should lead to independence. Now, the mandate system held until 1947. For the two decades prior to the rise of the World Zionist Organization and two decades after its establishment, European Jewish immigration to Palestine did not exceed 50,000, mostly from the Pale of Settlement and Romania, areas where people didn't have much of a choice. They needed to run, and then they found that the Jewish organizations, Zionist organizations, and the British government later allowed them, opened the gates of the country. However, you notice that most European Jews refused to heed the call of the Zionist movement to immigrate to Palestine. At the end of the First World War, the Jewish population in Palestine counted 56,000 individuals who lived primarily in major cities and about 50 agricultural settlements. By 1946, this number increased to 680,000 with 259 settlements. 74% of the increase was due to immigration facilitated by the mandatory power. They constituted about 31% of the population in 1946, and they owned approximately 5.5% of the land of Palestine, or about 1.5%. By the early mandate system, it was about 1.5% of the area of Palestine. By 1946, as I mentioned, the population increased in numbers and formed about, and the ownership increased to about 5.66. At that time, 48% was private Palestinian land and the remainder was public land. So what's offensive? You're giving a statement in 46 prior to the partition of what the constitution of the country was. Well, that's not acceptable. What did the Stand With Us organization in its complaints, which was reproduced by the leadership of the Jewish establishment organizations in Vancouver and distributed to the media here, what was its objection? What was the complaint? Why is this not acceptable? For two reasons. It omits relevant information in a manner that is deceptive. Why? Because of the following. The entire area in green was not owned by Palestinian Arabs. Only around 50% of the area in green was privately owned by Palestinian Arabs. The rest was owned by England, by the British government. Pardon me, do you know anything about land ownership in Palestine and in most Muslim and Arab countries? There are four categories of land ownership. There is first, mulk, or ownership. This is private ownership. The Palestinians had about, at the time, owned about 48% of the area of Palestine. The Jews of Palestine owned 5.8%. The rest was public land, but public land was made of several categories. One was mashah, public property. This is land owned collectively by the Palestinian communities. So in every community, part of its terrain was communally owned. So that's their land. The second part is called waqf, or endowment lands. And these are lands that are given in perpetuity to either religious endowments or to philanthropic organizations. So these are primarily Christian and Muslim endowments. So it is their property. And finally, there is the Miri, or the government lands. And the government lands are lands whose produce benefits the government, the coffers of the government, for administration, to keep security and administration in the country. So who is it done for? It's for the people of the land. Now imagine if someone comes to tell you that all the parks of Canada don't belong to you, the people of Canada. It belongs to Harper and his group, the cabinet. Is that feasible? Of course not. So what are we talking about? Some 94% of the land of Palestine belong to Palestine, to the Palestinian community. And that's exactly what this map one tells you. So be conscious of it. Her second complaint about map one is that it is deceptive. Why? Because it implies, it doesn't say, it doesn't tell you, it doesn't depict, but it implies that Palestinian Arabs had a sovereign state in the territory of Palestine. Pardon me? They were under occupation, British occupation. So how do you want them to have an independent country? Now, keep in mind that these arguments are actually arguments that are continuously reproduced by Jewish Zionist organizations and by the spokespersons and government officials of the State of Israel. So what Stand With Us did here was basically get its arguments from the foreign ministry and then hit you with them that this is deceptive. Why? Because it's erroneous, as well as it doesn't say what it should say. So they want you to learn what to say. What about map two? The second map of 1947, as you see, is the UN partition plan. It says that explicitly. Now, the General Assembly of the United Nations in 1947 divided the land against the will of the indigenous population and despite the opposition of every single country in the region, in the Islamic world, and in most of the third world. The people who voted for the partition of Palestine were primarily US and European. Why? Is it out of hate for the Jews? They didn't want them among them? So give them a land, give them a state, send them there. Now, as I had mentioned to you, under this partition, 57% of the best lands in Palestine were given to the Zionist organization to establish its state. They only owned 5.66, but were given 57%. Now, mind you, within the Jewish state itself, 55% of the population of the Jewish state, the expected Jewish state, were Palestinian Arabs, Christian and Muslim. In other words, about one-third of the population with less than 6% ownership of the land was given a state in more than half the country in which the majority were Arab Palestinians. So this is the partition plan. Nothing magical. But no, Stand With Us complaint. What was the complaint? The map contains unsupportable representations. Excuse me? It presents boundaries that never actually existed in reality. But who said they existed in reality? It is the goddamn partition plan of Palestine of 1947. I didn't tell you that it existed in reality. I told you that this was the plan being proposed. Now, why wasn't it implemented according to them? Because Arab leaders rejected it and launched a war to seize the entire Palestinian mandate. This is a long story with a lot of myths that surround it. For your knowledge, the Zionist organization in Israel, its leadership, had started in the mid-30s to develop its military plans for a forthcoming war. And what we know, that in the 1948 war that came about, the Jewish groups in Palestine, under the leadership, its Zionist leadership, had more men in the field and have a far more advanced weaponry and much better training. Sure, they will tell you there are tens of Arab countries. They sent six armies to invade Israel, the new state. What they don't tell you is that they began operations and they did not content themselves with the land allotted to a Jewish state. They actually expanded. And with their mighty military power and what they had, they were able to control 78% of the land of Mandate Palestine. So when you go to Plan 2 and Plan 3, this was what it tells you the result of the 1948 conflict, and where Israel took control of 78% of the land. But the most tragic element in the conflict is that the majority of the Palestinian population was pushed out of the country. A process of ethnic cleansing took part. What do we know about the ethnic cleansing that took place? There were in Palestine about 674 villages and towns in Palestine, Palestinian villages and towns. By the end of the war, there were only 99 remaining that were not impacted. And of these villages and towns that were impacted, more than 435 were totally demolished. And the population killed, injured, or thrown out of the country under the force of arms. And the towns and hamlets of the Palestinians were demolished. And Jewish settlements were either built on top of them or they became Jewish farms. You still go to Israel, and if you go to the countryside, many times you will see the remnants of Palestinian villages and towns. So a campaign of ethnic cleansing took place. And this was not by chance. What we know is the military high command had developed plans A, B, C, and D to face the war, the coming war. And Plan D or Plan Dalit called for the annexation of the whole territory of Palestine. But not just that, it called for the demolition of Palestinian places of residence and their expulsion from the country, because they felt that human element was the most dangerous to the security of the state in the future. Finally, Map 4 and 2002, which is named 2012. The fourth map shows that the only culturally independent Palestinian territory is Gaza and certain discontinuous parts of the West Bank, in which a limited measure of autonomy is exercised. But both Gaza and the West Bank remain either under siege or under direct military control of Israel. The land interrupted by Jewish-only Israeli settlements or colonies whose occupants presently number anywhere between 550,000 and 600,000. Remember, this territory includes East Jerusalem. Now come stand with us and says in its complaint, this map, map 4, includes unsupportable representations. I look at it and I see Gaza green because its population remains there. And I see the West Bank with dots, spots, discontinuous. And the rest, either annexed or outside the control of the Palestinian community. So by what stretch of the imagination is this map deceptive? In 1950, the Knesset passed legislation. It passed a law called the Absentee Ownership Law. A custodian was appointed, and the whole Palestinian ownership was given to the Jewish National Fund to own in perpetuity on behalf of what they call the Jewish people or Jewish nation. Palestinian Arabs who remained inside occupied Palestine at the time were left with 1 to 2% of their ownership. So when Stand With Us complaint says this is deceptive, in what manner is it deceptive? Because the green is labeled Palestine, and there's no sovereign state of Palestine in the West Bank and Gaza. We are now negotiating. This is contested land. We're negotiating with the Palestinians. So wait until we end the negotiations and you'll find out what is Palestinian and what is Israel. Okay. Well, you know, I can't come to you, knock your door and say, this is a contested house. I want what I want. Of course, by the force of arms, you can do that, but neither by standards of morality or legality. And this is the tragedy of Palestine throughout the 20th century. At no point from the issuance of the Balfour Declaration to the establishment of the mandatory power to the incoming of the Zionist movement and the migration, colonization of Palestine to the establishment of an Israeli state has the Palestinians ever had a chance, despite all their appeals, to have a court of law judge their case. Never. The only time it happened was 10 years ago. The only time. And it's important that we become aware of the incident. On December 8, 2003, the General Assembly of the United Nations submitted a question to the International Court of Justice for an advisory opinion. Now, you know, the highest legal authority in the international system is the International Court of Justice. There is no higher. However, the system of this court is that it will consider issues referred to it by the United Nations, its agencies, or sovereign states. So the Palestinians never had a chance, because there had never been a sovereign state, to submit. So this time, it was a reference by the General Assembly to the International Court of Justice. And that's what allowed it to consider. The question that was submitted for an advisory opinion was the following. To quote, what are the legal consequences arising from the construction of the wall being built by Israel, the occupying power, in the occupied Palestinian territory, including in and around East Jerusalem, considering the rules and principles of international law, including the Fourth Geneva Convention of 1949 and relevant Security Council and General Assembly resolutions. Fascinating. So an advisory opinion is sought. What was the decision of the court? The court issued its advisory opinion on July 9, 2004. And the highlights of this opinion were the following. One, all the territories occupied in 1967, including East Jerusalem, remain occupied territories, and Israel has the status of an occupying power. Although they were being asked about the wall, the court decided it's not enough and they need to go beyond. And what was that? That all of the territory occupied by Israel is Palestinian territory, and this and Israel is an occupying power, including East Jerusalem. So it's not a question of territory that's under contention, as the Israeli government has been telling us. The existence, second, the existence of a Palestinian people is no longer an issue. That's what the court is telling us. It's no longer an issue. You can't come and tell me there's no Palestinian government, therefore you cannot discuss Palestine. The Palestinian people are a reality, and it is not an issue to be questioned, they told the Israelis. They have legitimate rights, which include the right to self-determination. Self-determination. That's what the International Court is saying. Would you give the Palestinians today the right to self-determination? Be my guest. Third, the Israeli settlements are contrary to the Fourth Geneva Convention. So these were the primary conclusions of the court. Sad enough, Western powers, including our government, who claim that they abide by international conventions and international laws, decided and called for setting the report aside. To conclude, the four maps contained in the Palestine Awareness Coalition, they provide an accurate account of the tragic fate of Palestinians and its Arab-Palestinian population, both Muslim and Christian, and the unfortunate, tragic fate of their lands, homes, and businesses, and the tragic fate of Palestinian culture in Palestinian lands. All three elements are disappearing within Mandate Palestine. These facts are incontestable. What Stand With Us and other Zionist organizations are doing are clearly an attempt at intimidation and the silencing of a group of citizens driven by a clear conscience and the desire to inform. The most interesting aspect of what is happening is the contrast between the two campaigns. While the campaign of the PAC, Palestine Awareness Coalition, has been historically accurate, tempered, and very effective, the Stand With Us campaign has been hysterical, vindictive, and morally bankrupt. What a welcome change. Thank you, Palestine Awareness Coalition. What a great job you've done. Thank you.
We've been listening to a couple of excerpts from a talk by Dr. Hani Faris titled The Historical Context of the Palestine Maps, Fact and Fiction. If you would like to hear the talk in full, which includes a detailed history of the formation of the State of Israel after the Second World War, you can watch it on the website of the Palestine Awareness Coalition. And their website address is palestineawarenesscoalition.wordpress.com. Or you can find a link on our website, and that's cooperadio.org/redeye.